Corinthians 5 verse 7, for we walk by faith, not by sight.
Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Friday, August 19th, 2022. On today's edition, Mark and friends, the Friday edition, we're going to talk about living by faith, not by sight. Joining me in the studio is Pastor Jason Schiffo. That's the crowd noise. Ron and Sharon Fernald. Appreciate those two longtime friends. They actually live near our Fisher Fuslin Tower. Is it Bellflower? What town do you live in?
Near Bellflower.
Near Bellflower, out in the country
in the winter,
there.
You can see your tower.
In fact, we spent some time on Monday with our staff retreat with Doug Schroeder, who farms farmland around the Bellflower, Fisher, Dewey, Gibson City, Monticello area, I think, between 5,000 and 6,000 acres. So it's a big operation with a lot of help and assistance. But we talked a lot about that on Wednesday during when D was a part of the program. And so we appreciate Doug. He tunes in from his combine. In fact, his son, Joe, also tunes in and supports the station. So hopefully you guys, I guess they're not in combines now. I don't know, tractors or chicken.
So.
Yeah, in a little while. And then also in the studio, dear long-term friends. In fact, I always like to refer you to as in the know when I started dating Holly. And you guys knew something was up. They thought, I think those two are in love. I think it was at an event we had at our house. And then you shortly after that invited us over. But we appreciate you two and being a part of the ministry. Gail and Elmer Zules. And then Alaric Shafley, the reigning, consistent member of this morning's program when he joins us each and every Wednesday. We appreciate Alaric. He sings with the Singing Men of GNN, which incidentally, tomorrow in Leroy at 6 p.m., right in the park, and I guess it's the 100th anniversary of that bandstand. So I don't know how long Leroy's been around, over 100 years, but I guess they're designating it's the 100th year of the bandstand where we'll be presenting. It'll be a full concert at 6 p.m. tomorrow night with the Singing Men of GNN, which you can come and hear Alaric, who read that great verse, 2 Corinthians 5:7 for us all. He'll be singing in the baritone section, usually right near me or behind me or beside me. So thank you, Alaric, for opening up the program. So living by faith, not by sight. You've probably heard that or seen it on a coffee mug or a pillow or on the wall, but sometimes maybe misunderstood or misapplied. And as we know, Jason likes to share or often say, context is king. And so we'll learn a little about this verse, and hopefully all of us will maybe be able to take a step forward in our faith journey, recognizing that we do live by faith and not necessarily by sight. We don't necessarily see everything that God's up to. Nor would we want to sometimes, because it might be too stretching at the time, or maybe scary, or maybe we'd be like, but that's not the direction I had hoped to take. So we'll see what it means to live by faith, not by sight. So thank you, Jason, for joining us and being a part of today and many of these Friday editions of Mark and Friends.
Yeah, so for our group today, one of the things I want to ask is, what do you think it means to live by faith, to walk by faith, not by sight?
I was just thinking, I'm a little bit older and my memory isn't too great, so I have to walk in by faith that I get to the right place and the Lord is with me most every day.
I was saying, if we can see what's going to happen, that doesn't take much faith, does it?
That's right.
Well, let me ask this question too. Don't you think that sometimes what you can see is peppered by your bias? It's peppered by what you think, what you want, what you desire. I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes I can see what I think I want to see rather than what I ought to see. Anybody ever have that experience?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that a lot of times we're caught with this racial bias, things like that. If you're never raised in a biracial community in that, you always come up with just your background thinking is just of a racial bias. You have to overcome that by your faith in the Lord.
Mm.
So as you can extend your faith, your godly faith, mm-hmm. to everyone.
Yeah, so I want to talk about walking by faith and not by sight through a verse that I read recently in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is a book that was written by Solomon. It was written to a congregation. And so it was written to a group, to instruct a group in what it means. And what Solomon really does in Ecclesiastes is he's continuing to shift our perspective away from where we naturally fall to where we ought to be, which is upon the Lord. And he keeps using the words futile and vanity throughout the whole book of Ecclesiastes, saying, this is vanity to follow your own heart. This is futile to do this. And he wants to direct us back to God. And the verse about walking by faith and not by sight that I landed upon is in the 11th chapter. And it says this, it says, cast your bread upon the water, for after many days you may find it returns. And so this idea in this passage is to take your bread and to cast it upon the water, and that after many days, and we don't know how long many days is, it will return to you. Now, I've heard that if you go on the internet, and everything on the internet, by the way, is true. And so if you go on the internet and you type in Ecclesiastes 11:1 and follow it with the word sermon, you get a lot of messages about economics, about investment. That if you sow something in, it'll come back later as a multiple. In fact, lots of churches seem to love to use this for building programs and for raising money for different kinds of ministries and things like that. The problem is that context is what?
Everything.
King. Yep, context is king. It's everything. And so we need to understand what the context that Solomon is saying. And again, I already said to you, the context, the overarching thing that we continually see in the book of Ecclesiastes is vanity and futility. And so I would argue that there's no way that Solomon could be giving us economic investment advice, because in the 5th chapter of Ecclesiastes, in the 10th verse, he says this, he who loves money will not be satisfied. This is vanity. In fact, I want to read the whole verse because I think it's really powerful. The one who loves silver is never satisfied with silver, and whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with income. This too is futile. And so if you take that verse there and you apply it, Solomon can't be talking about economics and investment. He has to be talking about something else and something more. Also, we should understand that the book of Ecclesiastes is Solomon openly, and this is good news for all of us, openly wrestling his faith, wrestling what faith looks like for us. You know, sometimes I think that we don't, as Christians, wrestle our faith amongst others because we think that it will find us looking unfaithful. But listen, when you wrestle your faith, when the people of the Bible wrestled their faith, where did they always end up?
With the Lord.
Yeah, with the Lord. Yeah. Every single one of them. In fact, I love it because in the Old Testament, which one of the patriarchs ends up with a limp?
Jacob.
He ends up with a limp because he did what?
Wrestled
the Lord. How many times do you think people came across Jacob and they're like, what happened? And he's like, let me tell you, I wrestle with the Lord and he's got this move. He throws you right on the ground and you never get up the same. But Solomon wouldn't have been talking about investment or economic advice. Instead, Solomon is talking about something else. And the key to understanding what he is talking about here is actually in the word water in that verse. It says, cast your bread upon the water. And it's actually water. Does anybody know what water means in the Old Testament?
Life.
Life? Actually, the connotation for water and being life is more in New Testament than it is Old Testament.
Okay.
So what does water mean in the Old Testament? But good one, Alaric, because that's thinking like Jesus. Anybody know what water means in the Old Testament?
I'm not familiar.
No? Water in the Old Testament means the abyss or the unknown. Imagine, these are an ancient people who, when they stood at the edge of a body of water, what did they know was in it?
Oh,
nothing. Yeah. They knew that they, when they went out there and they cast their lines in the water, they would catch fish, but they never knew how deep it was, how big the fish were. They couldn't see the bottom. They couldn't swim to the bottom. Most of the water that they swam in was murky. And so they didn't know what was in it. So for ancient people, water was the abyss. It was the unknown. And so we begin by that by going to the beginning. And in the beginning of the Bible, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, the earth was formless and void, formless and empty. That means that it was a mess. The Hebrew there is tohu vavohu, which means literally wild and waste. It's a mess. And then it says, and darkness covered the surface of the water. So not only was it a mess, but there was darkness. And so darkness creates what for us? When you get up in the middle of the night and it's dark, what happens?
You're lost.
You're lost, yeah. Not only that, but I end up always stubbing my toe on something.
Or you step on Legos.
I step on Legos. Yeah, you take your pick. But darkness adds to the drama of this verse. The world is a mess. It's broken. And there's darkness. We don't know which way we're going to go. And then it says this. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters, over the unknown. How do we know that it's the unknown? Because anything that was known hasn't been created yet. This is prior to the world being created. So anything that could be known wasn't created or known yet. So it is the?
Unknown.
Unknown. Excellent. It's the unknown. And so the Spirit of God is hovering over the unknown. That is so instructive. Right there in the first three verses of the Bible is something that all of us need to know, is that in the unknown, the Spirit of God is there.
And I was thinking it's not unknown to the Spirit of God because he's there.
Exactly. And God is in the midst of taking that which is broken, that which is a mess, that which is in darkness, and shining light into it. What's the first thing he says? Let there be light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, the first verses of Genesis in creation are exactly what we see happen later on in the Gospels when Jesus comes into the world and light came into the world. Light came into the darkness, into the brokenness. The Spirit of God was hovering over Jesus, who was manifested in the flesh. It's fascinating if we really look at the Bible as this big, huge, expansive story about what God is actively at work doing. But then we go from Genesis, and I want to take you to a New Testament story. And the New Testament story is in Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14 has this famous story about Peter when he gets out of the boat. And if everybody know that story, can somebody recap? Just give me the highlights. What happens?
Jesus says, come to me.
Yep. And come to me where? Where is Jesus at?
He's walking on the water.
Yeah, okay.
Sea of Galilee.
Okay.
And it's stormy.
It's stormy. Ooh. Yeah. Okay, keep going. And then what happens?
Peter gets out of the boat.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Then he takes his eyes off the Lord.
Uh-huh.
And he starts to sink, and he says, Savior, save me.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that all the time, don't
yeah.
we?
And then what happens? Wait, we got the key part. What happens?
The key part, Jesus saves them, and they go back. They go in the boat together.
And then what happens?
The disciples are just amazed at
it. Yeah, they worship.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say the one part about Peter is not only did he take his eyes off the Lord, but he looked around him. I think they said he saw the wind and the waves.
Yes.
And it's like whenever we take our eyes off the Lord and allow other things to compete for our affections or allegiance or whatever, we then scramble and sink.
So for Jesus' original audience and for the early audience of the Bible, what is water?
Unknown.
The unknown.
Yes.
So Peter steps out where?
The end of the unknown.
Who is the only thing that's consistent in the unknown?
Jesus.
Jesus. And the wind, the waves, and the storms. And so Peter, it's very key for us to understand that water means unknown, because Peter steps out into the unknown because he has his eyes on Jesus. But in the unknown is where we encounter the winds and the waves. How many of you have done something where you stepped out into a place that you didn't know how it was going to turn out, and all of a sudden it got tough? All of a sudden there was wind and there was waves. And all of a sudden you had the faith to step out to do it, but in the middle of it you started to second guess yourself. That's what happens to Peter right here. Peter has stepped out into the unknown, and as he begins to question himself, what does he have? What happens to him?
Gets fearful.
He gets fearful, and he begins to what?
Sink.
Yeah, yeah. You ever step out into the unknown, you start to get fearful, you start to second guess yourself, and then you get this sinking feeling in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, this old story in the Bible is as new and fresh as maybe for some of us in the last few weeks or months. Now let's go to one more story. One more story in the Bible, which is in Acts chapter 27.
And as you page over to there, I was thinking, you said something very interesting, like Jesus is a constant, like a permanent. Yes. But you also said there's always going to be storms and wind. Sure. And I thought, that's probably something that we all need to hear, because we thought, when we come to Christ, isn't everything going to be smooth sailing? No, there's going to always be those hurdles, those aggravations, those things that don't go well.
Yeah, the man built his house on sand, and the man built his house on rock, and the wind and the waves and the storms came to both of them. So that's the constant, right? Jesus didn't say, oh, come to me and build your house on the rock and everything will be fine. In fact, if you hear that gospel presentation, run the other direction, because it's not true. It's not right. Everything is not going to be perfect. You're going to be sanctified and it's going to be hard and difficult. But the benefit is that you are going to become more like Jesus. And that is not only a benefit to you, yourself, those around you, but to the world. Last story. This is Paul. Paul is on his way to Rome in Acts chapter 27, and he's on a boat. A boat is on what?
On the sea.
Water. On water. Excellent. And water is what?
The unknown.
The unknown. Good, good, good. I was in a place once, and I said, and the water is on, and everybody just looked at me, and I said, if we can't get this, we're in trouble. The water is on the water. The water is the unknown. And what comes to Paul while he's on this boat headed towards Rome?
A storm.
Oh my gosh, this sounds a lot like what happened to Peter. Mm-hmm. And so in the midst of this storm, everybody on the boat begins to freak out. Everybody on the boat gets a sinking feeling. Everybody on the boat is like, what's going to happen? Turn around. Why are we even here? And this is what it says. Since they had been without food for a long time, Paul then stood up amongst them and he said, you men should have followed my advice and not sail from Crete to sustain this damage and loss. Now I urge you to take courage, because there will be no loss of any of your lives, but only of the ship. For last night an angel of God I belong to and I serve stood by me. Some translations say, the God whom I serve and worship. That's fascinating, because when the disciples, Peter and Jesus, get back in the boat, the disciples worship. The God whom I serve and worship stood by me and said, do not be afraid, Paul, for it is necessary for you to appear before Caesar. It's necessary for you to go there. And so Paul tells these guys, he says, listen, we're in the midst of the unknown. There is a storm. It is scary. You have a sinking feeling. You don't know what's going to come next. But I'm going to tell you right now, God is going to take care of us in the unknown. For Paul, out on the unknown, this is an issue of faith. For Peter, getting out of the boat, it's an issue of faith. The Genesis passages begin a movement of faith, a God who we can take heart in, because he makes something from nothing. He takes that which is broken, it's wild, it's waste, it's in the darkness, it's in chaos, and his spirit hovers over it. It isn't afraid of it, and he turns nothing into something. Now, let's go back to cast your bread upon the water. For many days it will return. So our bread is our faith. Jesus said if you had just a single seed of faith, but he said, listen, it's not yours to curate. The God is the one who waters it. God is the one who cares for it. And what is bread? A collection of grain, a collection of seed. So we take our faith and we cast it out into the unknown, knowing that the one whom we entrust it to, the one whom we value most, will at some point meet us in that. That in the unknown, he's there to reach out his hand to take those who are faint of heart and promise them that there is more that's going to happen. Now here, I want to have a caveat for you. It's not always going to turn out like you wanted it to.
Amen.
Anybody ever essentially walk by faith and not by sight? And along the way, you're like, this is not how I planned this would go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then how many of us have looked back and said, thank you, Lord, because if I did it my way, it would not have gone well. Mm-hmm. My definition of how things could go only are peppered only by what I can see right now. And God sees everything. God sees all of it. And listen, there are places where I cast that bread, my faith, upon the water, and I don't know how it's going to work out. But we have to trust in the God who's working all things out for his glory. And by the way, that's not something I think you just arrive at. Paul says in the fourth chapter of Philippians, I had to learn what it means to be in plenty and in want, to be low and to be high, to be in a place where I'm feeling that sinking feeling, in a place where I'm praising. And then what does he say? He says, I learned that all things, all things. Elmer, give it to me. You got it. I can
say all things work out for the good.
Yeah. For those who are in Christ Jesus. What Paul is saying at the end of that verse in Philippians is he's saying that all things require the strength of Christ. All things are where we walk by faith and not by sight. We should pray that we would be like that blind man who can't see the next step in front of us, because then we would walk more clearly by faith. Sometimes our sight deceives us, because since we can see it, we don't think we need faith to get from here to the other side of the room. And yet, if the lights turned out, how many of us could make it from here to there without stubbing our toe?
And you've said this many times about the importance of leaning into Jesus. Well, when we have great sight and things are going our way and we have the resources or whatever in the bank, we can sometimes look at our own steps and say, I'm doing pretty good here. And then we fail to really lean into Jesus and allow him to provide the direction, because we think we can do it. We can take it from here.
And this is a consistent theme throughout the Bible. I love how God speaks to Moses and he says, lo, I am sending an angel ahead of you to bring you to the place that I have prepared, to light the way, to bring you there. And why does he have to do that? Because Moses didn't know what he was doing. He was walking by faith, not by sight. He was walking out into the unknown with a bunch of people who were walking out into the unknown. They became quick complainers. They had that sinking feeling pretty quick. And yet, God is teaching the people of Israel through the book of Exodus to walk by faith and not by sight, to cast their bread upon the water, and to wait for that moment when God sends the bread back. And by the way, what I love about the thought about when God sends the bread back is that story when Jesus feeds the 5,000, because when Jesus offered the bread and the loaves up to God and God sent the bread back, there was enough to feed 5,000 and then leftovers. Mm-hmm. And so there is an abundance that comes back when God brings that back. And so we should pray that however long or short, that God would be the one who returns the bread, not us.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say along that same line that when we have troubles in this world, it just points out that we should be praying for those troubles rather than trying to take up arms to try to do things our way, and just have patience because the Lord is always there.
Yeah.
And what's that whole passage about where the troubles end up creating perseverance and where we grow through it all? So,
yeah.
2 Corinthians 5:7, which says, we live by faith, not by sight. May we have the eyes of Jesus today to seek out opportunity, to witness, to share, to see where there's needs and provide care and comfort and point people to our King of Kings and Lord of Lords, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and a team of friends with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.